guys. Welcome to Declarations of War. I am your host, Alexei Card, joined by my co-host, Jin Tan.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
And Artemis Elbosa.
Howdy, howdy.
First off, our shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to all of my new recruits. I'm talking to Galactic, Dano, and very, very especially Ronnie. They're all new recruits to the Capitalist Army, and Ronnie is a major podcast supporter with a very clutch donation over the weekend. Thank you very much, Ronnie. They've all been hanging out in the stream. They've been flying in the corp. I'm looking forward to getting to know all of them a lot better over the coming weeks and months as the Capitalist Army really starts to get underway. We're starting to recruit well, and I'm looking forward to it. All right, Jin, what are your shout-outs?
Are we not going to restart? Okay. My shout-outs are going to be to you, Deidre, and the rest of the Eosterdamned crew who put together a wonderful show for me to take part in. And also to the members of the... I can't remember their name, but their ticker is COG and their Mumcheese crew who helped make Eosterdam even more special for me.
Mumcheese crew?
Mumgee.
Mumgee crew, okay.
Yeah.
Artemis, what are your shout-outs?
I'm going to give a shout-out to my corp mate, Zeth Worrell. He's pretty new to the FC game, but he's picking it up, doing some good work, and keep it up, man.
All right. Now, we do have an open spot for advertising on Declarations of War with the shutdown of EVEbet. If you want to advertise your corp service in-game, out-of-game, doesn't matter, hit me up in-game through EVEmail. We'll talk price, you know, and it's quite reasonable. It's quite reasonable. So, you want to advertise in Declarations of War, your shout-out could be right here. Moving into our top stories, the big one, obviously, Ascension has launched, and we are experiencing the first week of EVE as a free-to-experience game, free-to-play game. However you want to think about it, you got the Alpha clones bouncing around. I've recruited a few. We're already seeing pure Alpha Corps starting up, getting into the hundreds, actually. The PCU is over 50k. The new bros seem to be pouring in. Also, some returning veterans. They seem to be having a good time as well. I'm very impressed by the excitement of all of them coming in. They're, you know, that was classic... wide-eyed, bushy-tailed noobs, you know. Never tried EVE before. Everything's new and exciting. They're very fun to hang out with. Jin, have you recruited any alphas into your corp yet?
No, my corporation is very much more focused on the high-end people, so alphas are not someone we're looking at. However, I have had the opportunity to talk to a few alphas. The CSM has been given access to the Rookie Help channel, so I've had an absolute wonderful time trying to give what I can back to the community in that respect. I haven't been doing as much as some of my other compatriots, very notably Bob Mon and Steve Ronican, but I like to think I've made a bit of a change.
Awesome.
But in general, it's been great to see. I mean, we hit 50,000 plus today, which was awesome. We haven't seen that in years.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're going to hit 60k by the end of next week. That's my guess. I've been spending a lot more time in the help channel as well, just trying to get a feel for these guys, and I've also found it's a great way to recruit them if you're looking for ones that are high quality, because you can engage them in an extended conversation and help them out, chip them a little bit of ISK their way, and they love you for it.
Exactly.
Artemis, are you with us?
I think I am.
Okay. Any alphas in our academy yet?
There are a lot of alphas in Mercenary Academy, the relaunch Mercenary Coalition-wide, not just Noir-specific version of Noir Academy. In fact, we just recently took them on the tour of Bazgrin, Mercenary Coalition's home system when we're not on deployment, showed them the Keepstar, showed them their Fortizar, which is in their alliances for their use only, and undocked some shiny ships for them to look at, and the reactions were wonderful.
That's excellent. Speaking of training them, the new tutorial, it's actually pretty damn good. I didn't hear any of the audio aspects of it, but my girlfriend Sarah has never played EVE outside of, like, getting lost on a roam with us once. You know, she did the old new player experience, then she rerolled a character for the new player experience, the new player experience. Night and day difference. I was watching her, she did it on stream, and I was watching her from the sidelines, and I noticed that by the end of the tutorial, she's already approaching, locking, orbiting of her own accord without waiting for prompts from the NPC voice actors and such. So, I mean, that's more than the original tutorial could ever get. So I think this is a huge step up. In terms of the visuals, it looks brilliant. It flows very nicely into the career agents and stuff. Like, I had to remind her that you didn't have to finish it all, because she was just taking career missions after career mission. Like, she just wanted to keep going. So I think that's a great sign for the new player experience. I think CCP did a great job. And I think we're going to get the most competent, successful new players that we've had yet. This wave of immigration is going to be fantastic for us. Have either of you tried it out?
I have. We got to both, the CSM got to both have an early look through the kind of storyboard of it and get a nuts and bolts run through a little earlier than everyone else, and it was great fun.
Has it evolved much since you got to see that preview?
Yes, it has. Originally, it was voice acted by CCP Karka, who had a very interesting take on certain accents. Yeah, it was very entertaining.
Speaking of accents, the new Aura voice, I just can't get used to it. It's
going to take a while.
I don't know what is wrong with it. It just doesn't sit right with me.
This is,
what's
this
your
is
opinion?
What you get for playing EVE Online with sound activated. Like, just no. I got
Rip
four
Aura.
For
Rip
you.
Aura.
I didn't bother to listen to Aura.
I kept her on just for Warp Drive active, and now it's different, and I'm threatened by change.
I keep sound on because I alt-tab when jumping gates and traveling a lot to, like, watch Netflix and browse Reddits and things like that, and so hearing that active sound, plus I lived in wormhole space for a while, and if you ever live in wormhole space, you know you've got to have cloaky eyes on all the entrances and exits, and the sound that it plays will haunt you in your nightmares, but it's incredibly useful. That's why I have sound on.
Fair enough.
On the topic of the new tutorial, though, it was hilarious. So in lead up to launching Mercenary Academy, effectively what we did is we had all of our prospective instructors and lecturers and teachers, or just people who wanted to be actively involved in the program, go through the tutorial so that you could sort of walk through it on a more personal basis with the new bros who are coming in. If they run into any trouble, you can sort of recognize where things may come up that they may not understand, and it's a better jumping off point so that you recognize what they do and don't know. And the most hilarious thing that happened was we had this guy, and he thought he was going through the tutorial on Singularity, and in fact he had accidentally logged into Tranquility on his new account and was running through that tutorial. And so he came back to us after running through it, and he's like, guys, this thing is terrible. Like, we're going to have to go through every single thing with these new bros. What in the world is going on? We're like, no, it's fantastic, actually. Are you sure? Like, what's going on here? And it took us about 10 minutes before we figured out he had logged into the wrong server and was using the old tutorial missions.
Oh,
but
God.
The new ones are fantastic.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
I still have to say that I wish one of the things that I think it was Graf had suggested became a part of it. One of his early suggestions was that they incorporate kind of a final test, like a final matchmaking thing, where you would be paired up with another new bro. You'd both be in noob ships, and you'd just have to kill each other. And, you know, there'd be no reward. It would just be a death match kind of thing to get people used to the idea of PvP. Because PvP is just so much of a rush in EVE Online.
Yeah. Didn't go anywhere, obviously, but I would be on board with it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well. I can just continue to say it until it happens. That's my plan.
I'll support you for sure.
Thank you.
Maybe there is a reward to it. You add each other onto your address books. You each have kill rights on the other. And it's just kind of like First person to die gets some big pile of isk. At each other, yeah, just fucking try to kill each other.
Throw them in, you know, the warp bubble you start in. I was thinking, like, teleport them to something like that, and just...
Oh.
Just, like, one of you's getting out of here alive. Straight up.
Okay.
Kill them. It'd be so awesome.
No, I like it, I like it.
I love it, yeah, yeah. It's like, that's why the Titanomachy thing was so fun.
God, that was the best EVE event. I can't wait for it to go again.
I look forward to next year.
Can you, I think I missed that one. Can you go over quickly just what the basic idea was?
So there are these conflict points all over the place. Each of them is bubbled up. And there are just piles of free ships on each one. And there's like a ship depot as well. Like a, if you watch the Hunger Games, like that starting area where there's just tons of stuff, but everybody dies around it. And you lose by being potted, and it just keeps going until everyone's dead. And then the arena slowly shrinks over time until there's finally just one beacon left, and you're all around it, and you're all bubbled up, and you just have to be the last person not potted. It was so much fun. I lasted for a couple hours, placed enough to get a Balgorn and an Ashimu, which fantastic. And I feel like next year I'll have a better handle on, you know, on just how to operate and be, and I won't spend as much time getting caught up. Like, I spent a good 30 minutes flying around in a smart bomb fit Tempest because I was like so hesitant about switching ships out. But now I know, like, you know, it's okay to be switching ships. Okay to try different stuff out. You know, what's the best way to go about killing people, that kind of thing. Definitely got to have somebody set up to go for the pods. That's a must.
Yeah, I was just about to ask, like, do you focus killing pods so that people can't come back, or do you focus killing ships because they're your main concern as far as threatening to yourself?
We had focus mostly on killing ships because for the most of the experience, we didn't have anything that was fast enough to catch a pod outside of the bubble. And most people were pretty good at keeping themselves outside of the warp disruption fields. Anyone that was in the warp disruption fields, we definitely killed. I think next time around, we're going to make sure that someone in our group... And you're allowed to group up, but the bigger your group, the more likely the tournament owners are to fleet up and kill you. So it's in your interest to keep to a small number. I think we'll spend one of our number on just, like, somebody finding a frigate or something like that that's really fast-locking. To try to kill some pods to thin the herd out faster. Well, that's next year. Presumably.
Well, I have a host highlight of my own, actually. I ran a fleet.
Not quite there yet.
Oh, sorry.
We got some major conflicts to talk about in 00. Okay. The Tribute War is progressing apace. Artemis, you just got out of fighting in MTAC-0 over the iHub. Would you like to give a first-person account of that battle?
Yeah, so I'm not really sure you could call it one individual battle, at least in the traditional EU sense. There were just so many, to the credit of FozzySov, AegisSov, whatever you prefer to call it, it's standing goals of you want multiple skirmishes happening where people have to sort of control the grid and not just come in and nuke things down. It's certainly having some intended effects. I think the most we ever got into a single system was about 2,500 people in local and MTAC-0 at one time. I don't yet have the numbers on the total people in and around the battle for everyone involved, but it was... quite a few, because throughout
it's
the
at least 500 more.
I'd say even more than that, because very rarely would you jump into a system that didn't have 300 to 400 people in local, and then MTAC-0 is usually between 1,000 to 2,000. So I would not be surprised if we're butting up against 3,000 to 4,000 people total, maybe even surpassing the previous MTAC-0 record of 5,000 people, like in the same area. I'm not too sure, but as far as the battle is concerned, things kicked off, everybody sort of got into position, and there were a couple of skirmishes that happened before the nodes even started to spawn. For those unfamiliar with the way that the solve system works, effectively you have these structures. The one that we were focusing on this battle was the iHub. It controls a number of things, which I won't get into, but suffice it to say it's a pretty important thing. And when you first reinforce it, then when it comes out, there are a bunch of nodes that spawn throughout the constellation, not just the system where this structure is located, but throughout its entire constellation. And you have to go and hack those nodes with Entosis modules. They spawn 5 of them, sort of in groups, over time, and you just have to hack them down. The defenders have an advantage based on how much they utilize their space, such that they don't have to hack for as long as the attackers, and so there's some counterplay there. Furthermore, they have some passive recharge, so if nobody's doing anything, then eventually the defenders will just automatically win. As a result, when things started out, we were sort of on the back foot again because some skirmishes got our fleets semi out of position, and so CO2 actually got up to around 75%, 80% completely defended on the iHub before we started it turning back. And afterwards, basically, we got our lives sorted out. Everybody was essentially, each entity was assigned a system or a group of systems in which they just had to watch for nodes and control those nodes in those systems. And for a while, CO2 was running around with, like, Tech 3 destroyer fleets or claw fleets and trying to blap small targets. So quite often you'll see rapiers or other recons with 500 meganewton, that's oversized micro warp drives on them. They go very, very fast. They're hard to catch unless you're also in a very fast ship. And so these claws and these Tech 3 destroyers would be great at just warping around quickly and killing those off. However, soon after, I don't know what we call ourselves as a group, but the people fighting Circle of Test, we came in and we were dropping faxes and other carriers on the nodes. Something to note about those is CCP did not want you to be able to just have an I win button to drop on a node and say, that's it, you're done. So what they did is they drastically increased the amount of time it takes for your hack to be successful if you drop a capital. And so what you effectively have to do, because Circle of Test has the defense advantage, they don't have to hack for as long, they've got a passive regen always helping them out, you basically have to have 2 people hack the node if you want to use a capital. You've got to use a Tech 2 Entosis, somebody to start spooling up quickly, that way you're making progress, and then you, once the capital has finally gone through his warm-up cycle and he's actively Entosising, you can just let him hold that grid. But Circle of Test would not be fooled by this. They effectively stood down all of the rest of their Canes and their A-hacks, and I forget what all fleets. Oh, Nightmares also from Project Mayhem came out, made a good showing. They actually tore into Pandemic Legion's Tech 3 fleet. Yes. It was infuriating. Mercenary Coalition. Of course, there's heavy time.
Stop. Jin can only get so erect.
Can you go back to the bit with the Nightmares? I wasn't prepared. I wasn't unzipped.
It was incredible. So we are in heavy tie-dye, mercenary coalitions in our own system, we're off doing our thing. Pandemic Legion calls out that they've aggressed on the gate in MTACO with the Nightmares, and they're trying to catch up to them. Nightmares, of course, have a large bonus to afterburner speed, they're difficult to pin down, they can go very fast, and so everybody sort of collapses in to try and kill these Nightmares, because everybody loves to fly Nightmares, and everybody loves to kill Nightmares even more. So we're all rushing to get in there. Tie-dye goes 10% and even more, it seemed like. And in the time it took us to warp from one side of the system to the other to get on grid, the fight was over. It was just insane. The Nightmares were effectively forced off just because of the sheer number of people coming at them. But they held their own for a long time and put in some serious damage. But after all that was done, Circle of Test, in order to counter all the capitals that were effectively being dropped on every single node throughout the constellation, formed up a 200-man torpedo bomber fleet. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, what happens when torpedo bombers, 200 of them, shoot at a carrier or a capital ship, that capital ship is volleyed. There is no, oh, maybe I'll tank, I'll slowly bleed. No, he's gone. And so we had to deal with that for a while, but eventually, as a result of the number of capitals we had and our ability to control CO2s, transit throughout the constellation, we managed to pull out the fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent strategy to pop the cap ships. I'm glad to see that they adapted to it, but the downside is stealth bombers can be bubbled, so trying to switch between systems is extremely dangerous. And this new sovereignty system, you can't just have a force in one system. You need to be mobile.
I will point out that the only time that Fuzzysov works as intended is in these large-scale fights, though, because you do have fights over every node. But that's just not possible in smaller fights, because you just don't have the concentration of FCing or other leaderships, or even people, for it to be viable in a block-level format.
Well, I don't necessarily think that it depends.
Yeah, it's not necessarily unsuccessful that a fight doesn't happen at every node. I think it's more that a fight needs to happen at every node, otherwise you will suffer the consequences, right? It's very simple to have some guy get bridged out into a random back-end system in the Constellation with a Tech 2 and Tosis rapier or something and just start going at the nodes. And
I mean, like,
the intent of
Fuzzysov was to split up fleets so that you don't have one big fleet, you have multiple fleets, but that only ever happens in times where you have coalition level warfare. In like regular alliance versus alliance, or even smaller block versus block, for example, the tri versus provi conflict, or even the vault versus tri conflict, you literally just see Fuzzysov used as, hey, here's a timer, come defend it. If our fleet is your fleet, you're gonna lose.
Because you're doing a suboptimal strategy in that case.
If you try and defend a node, five different nodes with five smaller fleets, you're going to get mopped the fuck up.
Except your defense entosis only takes 5 minutes, and the attacker entosis takes a billion minutes. So you could probably end you could end the timer entirely if you have a couple guys headed out there to take nodes while you fight. You're choosing not to do that because you want to have the maximum for your fleet. Which is fine.
No, we do that. We had defensive things, but, like, it's not... You can't realistically defend against several other people doing that. You either choose to split up your fleet into several sub-fleets and then get shit on by a single concentrated attacker, or you fight the attacker head-on and, you know, have Entosis working in the background. And then once you've finished fighting that main fleet, you then go and secure all your nodes.
If they don't attack the Entosis going in the background, though, then they'll lose. So the optimal strategy for them is to split their fleet up.
Strategy to hold their fleet in place with a big fleet rather than fight on each node in a distributed manner.
So you're doing the right thing. But if the attacker goes, oh shit, we need to fight on all these nodes, they will split their fleet up. In which case, you will probably have to split your fleet up.
Yeah, I suppose that's technically true, but. I mean,
they're bad, and they'll lose.
Has four or five FCs in it that are capable of doing that. I'd argue not very many fleets do.
Get good, Jin. Get good.
I was gonna say, Mercenary Coalition.
Have FC'd in Fuzzysov, just out of interest.
Dude, I FC'd the entire Fuzzysov beta, and I've FC'd the tax and tribute. I've FC'd the tax in the south.
Where they decided everything was fine, and interceptor entosing was perfectly balanced.
Yeah, because we were able to counter it pretty easily. Like
tranquility.
It wasn't an issue for the beta.
Even after the Entosis Scepters had gone away, I have FC'd and done both attack and defense campaigns, both on coalition level and sort of small-ish alliance level operations, right? We were down in Quirius, we were doing some Entosis operations there, more of the alliance level things you're talking about, Jin. And then there's also the coalition level stuff we've been doing up in tribute. And we tried initially doing the hold your fleet in one place, but what we found was if the hostiles are living in that space, if they're defending against you, then they can just seed Entosis and run Entosis nonstop in any system where your main fleet isn't. And while you may say, well, the main fleet can just go around and crush these Entosis one by one, that's true, but only to a certain extent. Your main fleet can only travel so fast, and they have a huge advantage in the amount of time it takes to capture these nodes. Plus, they can actively prohibit your movement. They can use Dictor bubbles, they can throw random Scepter fleets around to tackle your dudes, just give you a massively hard time traveling node to node to kill them off. And in the meantime, if they've got a group like Black Ops was used well, Fozzy Claws is what we call them. You just have a group of 10 to 30 Arty Claws. They're insta-warp. They go incredibly fast. Effectively, any sub-capital Entosis ship, you warp them onto grid to it, and it's dead before the defense can get there if the defense is not like in the T3D format. So while staying in one place has its merits, you effectively can't do it if the defenders know what they're doing, just because of the time advantage and the ability to slow down the single hulking fleet's movement. At least that's what our experience has been, both and defending.
But if the defender balls up, then of course the attacker can ball up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. My experience has almost always been that the intent was less to take the stuff, but to force a fight, so that is some of it.
Like, yeah, it certainly could
be. I still disagree. I still think that the optimal way to do Fozzy Sob is to simply force a fight, win the fight, win the systems.
I'm not saying it's unviable to do.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, if your goal is to take the objective as quickly as possible, then that's not the optimal way to operate.
I just don't agree that that's the best way to win a war, because you don't win a war by winning a timer at the end of the day. You win a war by demoralizing your enemies so they don't show up to fleet, so that they can't split up because they won't have an effective force.
Well, I mean, if you don't win any timers, then they're certainly not going to be demoralized.
Potentially true, but if you're trading like half a fleet for timers every day, you're going to run out of either money or people who want to just sacrifice themselves for a timer very quickly.
I suppose it depends if you're attacking or defending. We had this discussion. Yeah. I was doing a fleet command lecture just yesterday, and we had a very long and very productive discussion on the usefulness of ISK efficiency in fleets and whether it should be your goal or not, depending on your other objective, right? You're not just out roaming having fun. You've got some sort of strategic objective. And effectively, what we came down to, and there's certainly quite a bit of dispute around the topic, was that for a defender, while their morale may take a hit from losing ships, if you're not effectively diminishing their ability to make ISK, if you're not taking out their money moons, if you're not harassing the ratters such that they cannot recoup and replace their ships, then the defense of their space alone is enough to encourage them to join fleets and keep up participation and keep holding the line if all you're doing is focusing on killing ships. That's the position that I sort of have on the topic. What are your thoughts on that?
My position is always that you don't need to worry about ISK. As a large entity, ISK is not your primary concern. Your primary concern is your ability to keep people in those ships, so your ability to maintain a functional SRP and have stuff stocked, which if you're an even remotely competent entity, you will be able to do. I mean, even Providence can keep people stocked in, you know, faction battleships and tech threes until the sun goes down, so anyone else should have no problem with that. The real issue that you have is fun efficiency. Can you convince people that by logging on and getting onto this stratop, it's either A, going to be incredibly important, or B, you're going to get involved in a big enough fight where you have a chance of winning and you get several kills, which is what people generally use as a metric of how much they enjoy the fleet. You know, do people feel like they're making a difference, or do they just feel like they're buying time? I mean, buying time can be fun for a while, but it doesn't feel like you're a part of a war. It just feels like you're being forced to just storm the Normandy beaches over and over again, which isn't entertaining.
The bigger that you are, the less important ISK efficiency is, because you can afford those losses.
Actually,
for a small group that doesn't have, you know, money moons, doesn't have SOV funding, can't afford to, you know, replace faction battleships, then efficiency is super important. Like, your ability to go through the enemy's supply of ships faster than they're going through yours is actually super important, because you may not have the ability to replace them like the enemy does. As big of a metric as kills are for having fun, generally people don't enjoy losing. Sometimes they do if the ships are cheap and doesn't matter, but if they're losing expensive ships and it's costing their alliance towers or costing some sort of progress on holding the line, then that's like the worst case scenario. So it's a bit of a combination of the two, and I'd say depending on how well established and large your particular entity is, depends on which of that balance you fall on more.
I can definitely agree with that.
Indeed. And not to belabor the point too far, but on the fun metric as it relates to Entosis Ops, it's certainly my experience with the Mercenary Coalition dudes, and especially our new bros who are coming in and training with us, they really, really love the skirmishes that happen around Entosis Ops, because it may just be sort of the kind of person that we recruit, but they're not a fan of sitting around in a fleet and being an F1 monkey, just anchoring up, targeting broadcasts, and shooting at it. They enjoy flying around, being active, and effectively attempting to outwit their opponent, which is something that you can really feel like you're doing as a quote-unquote line member in an Entosis op where you've got multiple skirmishes happening around the constellation, when you really can't do that in a single fleet. So it's something to keep in mind, at least for what I have been doing whenever I'm doing an Entosis op, is dudes love warping around, doing things, and leading themselves, feeling like they're outsmarting the opponent.
Well, I think the great thing about Vazisov is now you have situations which cater to those players, and there's always going to be a role for the big fleet to like roll around and fight the other big fleet. So sort of bringing those different types of players together into one thing and making sure everybody feels like they have something that's for them in the Sov system, which I think is fantastic and something that the critics of Vazisov don't give nearly enough credit.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, I grew up in Dominion Sov, so I miss Dominion Sov, I'm not going to lie. I'm that kind of person.
I was hiding out in Wormhole Space when Dominion Sov was still a thing.
to be fair.
It was scary.
Like, hey, wormholes are scary to me. I was in there for a while, I made a bunch of money, and then I left, and I never interacted with anyone. It was great.
Well, speaking of Entosis-ing, you know, it's not the only game in town. We've also seen some very huge fights happening in LoSEC, in particular between the three entities of Snuffbox, Shadow Cartel, and Project Mayhem. Now, these are happening more or less in the north-northwest of New Eden's LoSEC space, and they have had some interactions with the Tribute War. Circle of Test won a pretty substantial ISK victory by getting involved in a Project Mayhem Citadel that was being attacked by somebody, and it turned into a big, huge war in the basically the Tribute War, as Circle of Test showed up, as Pandemic Legion, NC Dot showed up, Goon Swarm came in and third-partied, the Russians were there and third-partied, and it was a massive victory. But I mean, both sides bled heavily. We're talking hundreds of billions of ISK, and that's not the only one. It feels like every couple days there's a new capital fleet being slaughtered on one side or the other to the tune of tens of billions of ISK. 60 billion, 70 billion, 80 billion worth of capital ships being destroyed in this LoSEC grudge match. Very exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. With no tie-dye, might I add. So if you're interested, head up to like the Black Rise area.
Yeah, everything seems to be just heating up. I think people have realized, I don't even know, just like people seem to want to fight lately. All over the place.
I think there's a feeling of renewed energy in the game, generally.
I'm just going to call it the Winter of Hate. Everyone started hating again. That's good. We needed more of that in the game. Everyone was too friendly. We brought the hate back. That's good.
I am very interested to see, with the Ascension release, apart from the incredibleness that is Alpha Clones and all of the other balance changes that happened, most capital ships got a bonus to their range. So now, instead of capping out at 5 light years, they can go with 7? Correct me if I'm wrong? 7 light years max skills?
7 light years okay. For regular capitals and 6 light years for super capitals. This is something I pushed really, really hard for last CSM summit, so I'm super happy.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that's going to affect LoSEC. With all these capital brawls that you have, with supercaps showing up quite often, actually, I'm wondering if it's going to spread out instead of just being centered around wherever the major engagement is happening. Like, these big fights happen, and as you mentioned, it got extremely escalated when Circle of Test and NCPLMC got involved in that one fight over this Astrahas. I'm wondering if it's going to spread out a bit more, if more parties will be involved. You don't have to be sort of directly involved in some big major conflict in order to come in and participate in these brawls. And so will that sort of force them to spark up more often?
I don't think it will decentralize the conflict, because the LoSEC objectives, by definition, are centralized. I think it will extend the number of people that are able to join in on those things. And one of the reasons why jump range was cut and jump fatigue was added was because groups like Snuff and Shadow Cartel were able to drop capital ships nearly anywhere in the game anytime they wanted, which resulted in people essentially being unable to use capital ships if you weren't part of that group, because effectively you would get dropped. It was nothing for them to go several Sinos to kill a bunch of capitals and then go all the way back. So we'll probably see more of a return to those days, perhaps not as bad, but probably pretty close. I'm not super happy about that, but I would love to hear why Jin thinks it's a good idea.
What, the changes to the range?
Yeah.
Because I actually advocated for either a change in the range to be up or add some new gates to make certain NPC regions like a lot more viable, because before this change, Stain had pretty much died. Stain used to be a very, very active region. I could almost always go there for fights, especially in smaller gangs, which I do enjoy doing from time to time. But ever since the ranges had changed and fatigue had changed, it had just killed that region, because there was only one entrance that you could get to from NPC Nullsec. Sorry, from NPC space. That includes Losec. So you had to either go through catch or go to this one specific system. As you can imagine, that basically meant that whoever controlled catch controlled Stain, and that wasn't a good place for it to be. And there were other places like that. Basically everywhere that wasn't in the north had that issue happen to them, and it was like just strangling every single NPC Nullsec region, and it was so sad because they're like one of my favorite places to roam, and especially one of my favorite places to park my solo PvP ults. And beyond that, it was leading to a lot of really weird shit going on in like inside regions. Like there's a lot of places that were just randomly hard to get because the game obviously wasn't built around the principle of, you know, 5 light-year movement. For example, North and South Providence were super, super far apart for like no reason, and it made it impossible to reasonably project your power from any one point. And it also meant that people couldn't like actively drop on us. It meant that the only place that people in where Tri were staging, which was Karam, I think. Fuck, no, it wasn't. I can't remember what it was, but it meant that they could only drop in KBP, and it meant that basically they couldn't use their capital power effectively. Which I didn't like. I really wanted to be able to get a good capital brawl going with them.
You could send them through a gate. Like, it's not the worst thing.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but if you do that with Forxes, you're gonna just get... Like, that's a bad idea. If you get trapped on a gate with your capital fleet, and your fleet is almost entirely capitals, you get just shit on. You have to jump in.
See, that's where I'm disagreeing with you. I think there should be some risk for using it. Either you have the convenience of just dropping into something, but if it's out of range, you need to be a little more creative and take a little risk.
Yeah, you can.
I don't think it's a good thing for the game to just be able to...
It's not, like,
jump wherever you want to jump.
You also still have fatigue. You realize that, right? And the fatigue is worse if you use the upper end of those ranges. Like, really bad.
It's not, though, because it caps.
Question mark?
No. Not a question mark. There's a jump limit, a jump fatigue limit, and
yeah,
it's pretty low.
Yeah, the jump fatigue limit still is it. It's more the reactivation timer that I'm talking about. That's very important. If you jump in at max range with dreads, you have to wait until your cycle finishes, and then 2 more minutes before you can jump out. And that fatigue is huge if you start jumping back again. Like you do, you basically can no longer use your caps for the rest of that day. Whereas in 5 light-years, you can potentially use it again, like 8.5 hours later.
I just don't think that's a substantial amount of time.
Fair enough.
I mean,
you don't think a day is a substantial amount of time? That's your
opinion. No, how many multiple times are you going to do that a day? Probably not too many for most people. Whereas, one day, then do it tomorrow, and the day after that, still seems like a lot.
Yeah, well, I like there to be some ability to interact with other people that are close to me, or other people to interact that are close to me. I like there to be more chance for other people to fight me, because that's you know, what I enjoy. I want there to be more risk involved in me doing things, and I want other people to have more risk when they're doing things to me. I want to be able to project my power, because that means other people will be able to project their power onto me. I don't want it to go back to the days before Fatigue, where it was just whoever has the biggest cap fleet wins, but I still want there to be more ability for people to interact with me, because it's boring to just be able to jump, to be able to know literally every single system that's in range of you, and be able to see every single system that's in range of you, and know that there are no cap fleets there.
The way that I look at it is, Jump Fatigue was effectively a hotfix that CCP utilized to limit projection, right? Prevent big groups from basically being able to wave the capital force anywhere with very limited risk, because they're the biggest fish, quote-unquote, in the area. And so you have, as Alec pointed out, situations where individual smaller entities just cannot utilize a certain part of the game mechanics, being capital ships, because there's going to be this bigger fish that can pounce on you. But I think it's a bit unrealistic to expect CCP's first pass on the ranges and the fatigue balance to be correct. And I would expect not only this most recent update, but I would expect more updates to the fatigue system and the ranges, simply to Jintan's point where he mentioned various regions where Eve and its geography was not designed around jump fatigue and limited capital range as it currently is. So you're going to run into trouble where capital ships just don't work in the geography of various regions and constellations. And I agree with Jintan very much so that you can't, at least in my opinion, have regions where, again, you run into a situation, no matter what size entity you are, you just can't utilize this aspect of the game. I think that's going to be broken. And so I would expect some more tweaking of the system to get it into a balanced place where you don't have too much projection, too much power. The big fish can't limit other people's use of capitals the way they used to before the changes, but then still allow capitals to be useful in all areas of space where they are intended to be.
Like that metaphor you had there with the big fish. What I'm saying is I don't want there to be a bunch of little ponds all around the place where one person can be a big fish. I want it to be a stream. I want there to be a river running around the edges of Eve. And I want big fish to be able to jump from, you know, eddy to eddy and just, like, shit on other people, because that's big fights, and big fights are fun.
Yeah, I don't know if those are big fights, though.
Capital fights aren't big fights.
Not if you're just hot-dropping a small number of capitals, then it's just a slaughter that's going to be over too quick for anyone to really join in on.
I mean, yep, technically, yes, that could also describe any potential fight. At the end of the day, people like fighting. I would much prefer there to be, you know, a chance to jump on someone like that, or a chance to bait someone into doing that.
All right, well, let's move on.
Yeah, like, we'll agree to disagree here.
We'll agree to disagree.
Yeah, as we do on a lot of things, I find Alexia. It's nice.
I mean,
opposite ends of the spectrum.
One of my things, like, I would be more okay with the range increase if fatigue was less nerfed than it currently is. But it is what it is for now. You know, if it gets really bad, I'm sure CCP will take another pass at it. But I remember how capital usage was in LoSec back in the day, and even in 0-0, it was utter shite, and I wouldn't want that to return.
Yeah,
so
the pre-jump fatigue era was not a fun time, and I did not enjoy that.
Back out to 0-0, now in the south, we have Stainwagon versus Vanguard. Jin, these are some alliances that you know very well. Take our listeners through what's happening down there.
So, As I might have told you guys, Tri went through a period of testing, quote-unquote, Providence. We had a bunch of back-and-forth fights. Apparently there were a ton of great fights that went down whilst I was on holiday. Grr. But in general, there was, like, a lot of fun going on. But they eventually started to get bored of us kind of bringing a lot of dudes to every fight and just basically outnumbering them and them not being able to bring their capitals. So they moved on to a completely different target. As people also might have known, Volition Cult, ex-Probably Block member, vacated the Probably Block region to become a full independent. So they were sitting out there in the north of Catch, and Tri decided to give them a poke. And after a couple of fights that very much did not go in Volition Cult's way, they ended up allying up with Stainwagon, which prompted Tri to start calling in some of their allies into the grid, which prompted Stainwagon to start calling themselves in and other allies. And in general, we've just had a bunch of like large-scale fights, you know, 1,000 man, 800 man, you know, tight, not quite like 110% tie-dye, but, you know, 40 to 50% tie-dye slugfests, just battleships on battleships, minimal capitals. And it's been very, very entertaining to watch. I'm not particularly fond of my own alliance's involvement in that, because I think the way that Volt left the coalition was not a particularly friendly way, but at the end of the day, content is content, so people are having a lot of fun. A lot of our younger FCs are getting some training on how to deal with tie-dye, which is great. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens, because if Tri really wants to, they have beaten Stainwagon before. It'd be interesting to see if they try and go for it again.
Indeed. What doctrines are they rocking versus what doctrines is Volt rocking?
Volition Cult have been running Makarials and Tech 3s primarily. That actually reminds me. Tri bought a very, very interesting comp. Not last time, but the time before that. They brought Makarials coupled with 100 MN Tech 3 Logis.
Ooh.
And that was very interesting to see, because they seemed to be evading enemy Makarials like with ease. The only problem they seemed to have was getting volleyed by Nightmares and a couple of other things, but they also were able to clear off tackle and get off grid pretty quickly. In general,
were these armor or shield?
Armor. So 100 MN Proteuses, I believe.
Protes Malotes.
It's pretty cool. Like, Tech 3 Logis are in general getting more and more used. Like, even we're experimenting with them.
They're pretty strong. I'm always concerned about the range on them, though. They're quite short range. I don't know if I'd be confident strapping 100 MN afterburners to mine and hoping they get back in range of my faction battleships.
Actually the reason I asked shield or armor, because with the changes to the way logistics work with their optimals and fall off, the 100 MN wouldn't necessarily penalize you as much in shield. You have the extra agility, so you can take advantage of and not be penalized as much by the 100 MN. But furthermore, if you do drift a little bit out of your optimal, it doesn't hurt that much. In fact, if I recall correctly, halfway into their fall off, shield reps are still 80% effective, roughly, if I'm remembering that right. So it's interesting that they go with armor. To the range point, it has been changed probably since you last tried it, Alec. I'm not sure when you last looked into it, but you can get out to around 11 kilometers with regular Tech 2 reps, depending on various factors, and then your dead space reps, which are only available for the medium size, which is one of the reasons I look at them particularly and find them interesting and powerful tool. I just don't know how to quite utilize them yet. Their range goes out even farther. So the range issue isn't as much of a problem.
I still feel like, because you got to keep in mind that 10 MN afterburners are very, very ponderous to adjust.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd have to go look at the numbers. Maybe it's just the case that their speeds match up pretty great, like Makarials with micro-warp drives and the 10 MN afterburner Tech 3s. Perhaps they don't really drift out of range much at all. But if they ever did, like, it's very difficult for them to get back. You're talking 20 seconds minimum, probably more like 30 seconds to turn around. And your ship probably going to be dead at that point.
Yeah, you're right. That's one of the things I love about when fights break out in the south, and particularly the southeast, is that the doctrines are always sort of... the meta changes down there. Historically, Russian groups have had shield capitals and super capitals even before the changes and the balance changes, where the shield capitals and super capitals are effectively better in many metrics as far as tank and damage output is concerned. And so I always love it when fights break out down here and we can see what the meta is looking like, what these guys have got racking around in their brains. Like, armor Tech 3 logistics with Makarios is something I would have never thought of in my wildest dreams. but apparently they put it to good use, so I'd have to dig into the numbers. I love that about these engagements.
ETA to Nestor Logistics, guys?
We've actually we tested those for a while, but they turned out to just not be good.
Why?
The problem was lock speed. You couldn't get them to lock fast enough, on even on battleships, to the point that they were just completely useless. You needed to use like at least 2 resubos on them to get them up to snuff, and that just wasn't feasible in large-scale warfare.
When we were testing them, we're on a different scale than you, I think, and so we were able to put to use resubos to sort of fix the locking problem. Our issue was more with their signature radius. So they're battleships. They're going to have a larger signature radius than most other ships, albeit they have the smallest SIG, if I recall correctly, of any battleship. It's one of their special traits, as well as being able to go into C1 wormholes. But in comparison to other logistics platforms, like your Tech 2 logistics cruisers, and even Tech 3s, particularly of the armor variety, they have extremely small signature radiuses. So even though the Nestor has a smaller signature radius in its class, it's still a massive increase compared to what you're typically used to using. And that was the biggest problem we ran into. Yeah, for
well,
sure.
We're talking about the kind of block scale, like we're talking about 100 plus battleships shooting you, wherein kind of Nestors just suck because you can't lock them fast enough to start applying the reps to rep them up in one full cycle. That's another problem with just armor reps in general, but they don't have the mitigation of a Guardian.
Yeah.
Personally, we've been testing out Shield AB Lokis to rep up our Nightmares, and that's been very, very promising so far.
Why the Loki over the Tengu?
Because the Tengu has shitty cap.
Ah.
It does work. Like, you can get it to work, but Lokis are also faster, which helps with keeping up with the Nightmares with a regular AB.
Yeah, I would go for the cap, and also the SIG radius is lower.
Oh, they can get that much lower? Better. I thought they were the same, but
Loki should have smaller, or maybe it's one of the subsystems that makes it smaller.
It's got the amplification node, which decreases its signature to like below 100. It's really sick, but
yeah,
I've always wanted to do an AB tanking like high grade Halos Loki fleet.
Yes,
but
yeah,
unfortunately, my alliance does not have the money to just make me do that. Next, maybe I'll have to join you at some point, Alexia, and we'll put that together.
Oh, that'd be epic, too. Bring an alt in.
What are the penalties on X-Tink again? It's not to shield hit points, it's to armor hit points, right? So you can make that SIG drop even further with drugs.
I mean, you could also use the... No, there's no... Is there a Drifter one for SIG? I don't think there is. I think it's cap.
I don't recall off the top of my head.
You could also just, like... cycle characters for it. Or use synth.
Alright guys, let's move on to host highlights.
We're just sitting here theory crafting. Like,
that was it was awesome. I just want to move things along. I've been streaming a lot more lately, and it's been pretty great. I'm trying to stream most, if not all, of my EVE gameplay with few exceptions. Sometimes when I'm just too tired to do it, or if there's something like moving a freighter that just shouldn't be broadcasted, I'm not doing. But like everything else, I'm trying to broadcast, even if it's boring shit. Just because it's a great opportunity to interact with fans of the show, to interact with potential recruits, new players, old friends. And you never know what's going to happen in EVE, really. So it's been great. I had a not so flattering moment where I tried to fight a Vigilant with an Algos. It did not work out well. turns out they're really fast. I'm not very fast. So my plan was like, I'll just kite him at range. It'll be totally fine. No, he closed range pretty quickly. By the time I overheated my micro warp drive to keep pace, it was like 15 kilometers, and I was increasing range very, 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 very slowly. And he was just applying damage. It didn't go well. But it is what it is. the rest of it's been great. I've been able to recruit a lot of people through the stream, so that's been great. If you want to tune into my streams, it's twitch.tv/AlexeyofCard, or beam.pro/Alexo. Definitely show up, come hang out, come roam on the stream. I'm down with all of it. Artemis?
Go to Jin real quick. I'm still pondering.
Oh, Jin, go, go.
Yeah, no worries. My host highlight has got to be my first fleet back in the seat. It's a bit rusty after about 3 weeks off, but it seems my beginner's luck had somehow managed to manifest itself again as I was flying through the south, flying through Catch, and I scanned down a Macario from a small Oracle fleet. I walked to it, didn't catch the Macario, was about to get salty, but then we managed to decloak a Tengu that had been trying to sneak up on it, and it lit a Sino and brought in an Archon and like 20 blops on us, and we just started murdering them in Tech 3 Destroyers. Eventually we lost enough that we couldn't break through their reps, so we walked off to a ping and started just spearfishing them off the Archon with MGD Destroyers, and it was hilarious. We killed about 20 billion ISK in Russian blops over the course of about, 10 minutes. It was probably one of the most hilarious fights I've ever been in.
Wow.
Just shows you what you can do with a couple of well-placed MGDs. Oh, also, we lost the same True Sentious Webifier 3 times, because we picked it up from a wreck, then the person who picked it up from a wreck died, and then someone picked up his wreck, and just it kept going and going. It was very funny.
Epic. I love T3Ds. Fast becoming my second favorite ship class.
Definitely
right behind the Interceptor.
Balanced. Incredibly balanced.
Oh, yeah. Actually, they kind of are, because it's so easy to screw them up. I was just watching a Twitch stream of the MTAC-O fight, and this guy was trying to spearfish. He's a competent FC. He was running his fleet very well. Trying to spearfish some damnations off the field so he could kill them with his destroyer fleet. And he tried it two times, I think, and both of the MJs missed, because one guy accidentally got bumped. I think the other person was pointing the wrong way. You really do need to have your shit together to figure it out. So I'm pretty okay with it.
It certainly brings an interesting metric or thing to keep in the back of your mind on the battlefield. And my host highlight, it's not very traditional, but I'm a theory crafty kind of guy. I love this podcast so far simply because we were able to dive into the various mechanics of the game, talk about fitting, talk about options, think about the optimal way to do things, or just the fun way to do things. And something I thought was hilarious that happened recently was there was a fight going on. I think it was an MTACO. There was your standard circle of tests, and then PL, NC, GOTG, and MC were around. And CO2 has these claw fleets, the Fozzy claws, which I've mentioned before. They're really tough to kill because they insta-warp and they've got arty, so they don't necessarily have to get within scram range of you. Of course, they're interceptors, so they can get out of bubbles. And one of the things that PL did, I don't know if it was intentional or accidental or what, but they just warped a bunch of Macarials to a ping on a gate. And, of course, CO2, being the competent people they are, they have combat probes out on the system. They're taking down targets, just warping the claws in, volleying them off, and warping them off again, off into the sunset. But for some reason, they warped the claws to zero on these Macarials, and then all of a sudden, the smart bombs lit up. And so, even though they didn't get caught off, they weren't in warp to a gate, your typical pipe bomb scenario, because they wanted to kill these shiny pirate faction battleships, they were baited into effectively a giant fireball of death. And it was beautiful. I laughed so hard after it happened. I feel so bad for CO2 that it happened to them, but it was amazing.
No, death to the Fozzy Claw. Good riddance.
One of my dudes in my alliance, we call him, we're not going to talk about what we call him, but he loves mining, and he is one of the main proponents behind the Roracle, which has certainly seen some use in the Fozzy Solve era with the Panic module and things of the like. he's talking about the new drones, the excavator drones, and they're incredibly expensive. Base, they cost 500 to 700 mil, but of course, because they're so new, they came out with the balance changes to the Rorqual, that price is fairly inflated. And so what he is planning, and in fact, he has posted it out for this, he's just going to go around and roam through Russian space and the drone regions, basically the entire right side of the Eve map, find all of the Rorquals who are sitting there just farming it up, and not shoot at them, but shoot at the drones. Because if you kill one of those drones, you can whelp your entire fleet and still be ISK positive. He is salt mining the miners.
That's hilarious.
He doesn't care about kill mills, because of course you don't get kill mills, but all he wants is the salt and local. It's beautiful.
And hopefully he has a big old stack of those drones that he's planning to sell as soon as he's done with this campaign. Alright, so as you guys know, or if you're just listening to the podcast for the first time, hello Alpha Bros. We like to end the episode reading some old region descriptions of Eve. Today we have Genesis, Haematar, and the Great Wildlands. I'll take Genesis, and here we go. Genesis? For all my Star Trek bros. Alright. In the beginning, all things were as one. God parted them, and breathed life into his creation, divided the parts and gave each its place, and unto each bestowed a purpose. The Scriptures, Book 1, Verses 1 to 4.
That was an incredibly impressive voice you had there.
Thank you, thank you.
All right, The Great Wildlands. This is an excerpt from The Travels of Jermone Farouche. Pirates, scoundrels, vagabonds. The most enigmatic of all Mimitar tribe members are called many things, but no one truly knows them. I have researched them perhaps more than any scholar alive, and I still know nothing.
Wow.
That's pretty good. Jin?
I've got a nice long one here. The region description of Haematar.
You better put a lot into this one. It's all...
Never again.
It's a very interesting choice of tone there. It's an angry, a backlash.
Have you ever met a Haematar person? That sums them up.
I am.
That's Haematar. Racist.
I'd say I'm Amarian, but I'm not. I'm Galantian. But I work for the Amarians. I'm allowed to be racist. It's expected.
That's how you get ahead in the world.
Yeah.
Alright, guys, that's it. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in our show poll or leave a comment on this episode. Guys, the Capitalist Army is recruiting. We are looking for veterans. We are looking for alphas. We're looking for new omegas. We're looking also for corps right now, potentially. Considering, some kind of partnership if your corp is large, like in the 50 to 100 something or more larger range. I'd say no one smaller than 50 would I consider that. But definitely looking for new recruits. The Capitalist Army is doing quite well. We're almost up to 10 active members. That's to put you in perspective for you guys. It took me like 2 months of recruiting for Noir to get up to that. And for the Capitalist Army, we've done it in just over 2 weeks. That's outstanding. And the guys that we're bringing in are really high quality people. I'm very excited about the prospects of this corp. So if you want to get in on the ground floor of it, come join the Capitalist Army right now, baby. And that's it. Good hunting, listeners.
Take care and fly smart.
Okay, guys, get ready.
I just kicked like 7 people, so.
Okay, guys, get ready. Jump! Wait, you hardeners. AB on. Enter up on me.
Guys, all damps need to be on subcaps. All damps on subcaps. Все демпера на субкапы.
Boss, they don't have subcaps.
Really? So, three devoters, Loki. Oh. Am I imagining things?
They're all at like 120.
Yeah, put range damps on them. Primary broadcast. Бля, куда ты полетел? Блин, Кобра номер два. Guys, unlock target. Guys, anchor up on me. Let's go. What did we just lose?
Tengu.
What?
Yep.
Tengu.
How?
He was too close.
Guys, pick a ramp. Guys, shoot sentries. Just everyone shoot sentries.
No, bleep. No, Tengu.
How?
Tengu.
Guys, shoot sentries. Continue shooting random sentries. I need range damps on Matlow, please. Matlow needs to be range damped in broadcast. Make his log range be 10 kilometers. And keep on shooting sentries.
What did we just lose?
What did we just lose now?
Tengu.
Come how? On. How do we lose Tengu to 40 fucking carriers? How? Guys, don't bother shooting. Stop shooting. This is ridiculous.
Shoot SPU or something. It's more interesting.
Tengu down.
Guys, if you are getting shot, broadcast.
Dead in 4 seconds, man.
Yeah, well, look where he was.
No, fuck. I was 500 meters behind Maka.
Shut up!
No, you weren't. You died 50 kilometers behind me.
Shut up.
Whoever just died, you're a piece of shit. You don't know how to play this game. Go away. Yeah. And be quiet in comms.
He didn't anything wrong.
Really? Being 50 kilometers behind me is nothing wrong?
Died.
I was 50 kilometers off.
Shut up! Everybody align D3 right now and shut up on comms. Next person who talks, I will primary you and kill you, not reimburse your ship. As a matter of fact, you'll get kicked from Alliance while you're at it, too. If you can't figure out how to fly your fucking ships, it's not my problem. If you died, you're probably a retard. Because there's
Simi's
no reason
MW
why you should have died.
MW
guys,
off.
Everyone warp D3. Guys, jump D3. Don't remember telling anyone to warp. That's 10
guys,
million. That all that you warp,
friendly.
All of you that warp, that's 10 million. So keep warping, please, and you can pay money. Sometimes you guys amaze me with your stupidity. Guys, keep going. Hi, guys, I already basically got a bunch of shit out of the station. That was the purpose of this was.
Wait, is PR perma camping on 24/7?
Pretty much. If you lost a tank, please go to Gita and buy yourself a brain. Oh, guys, by the way, check, guys, while we are still on comms, that armor hack fleet that announced in 2 days was a big joke. That's not gonna happen, so don't go running buying armor hacks. We don't roll in armor hacks.
Armor hacks!
We roll in tangos, which don't
kill. At well, go ahead.
We roll in supers.
Yeah, you can go ahead, just not in armor hacks.
Roll armor hacks.
We don't roam in armor hacks. You
Why
don't
not?
Roam. Okay, guys, there's CTA setups with shut up. There's a CTA setups with certain goal in hand, and then there's roaming setups. Armor hack is a setup with a certain goal in hand. You don't go fucking roaming in armor hacks. Not in this alliance, not when I'm here. Is that clear?
So what's a roaming setup then?
Nano. Go bring hurricanes. Go bring tornadoes. Go bring drakes.
But should
I said you don't roam in armor hacks, that means you don't roam in armor hacks. That's the end of that.
Period.
Armor hacks are great if you have a certain goal in mind. If you know what you're doing, if there's a strategic objective, armor hacks, yeah, that's great. If you do not have a strategic objective, you do not roam in AB ships. You don't. Sorry, not in this alliance. We goons do, we don't.
You are boring.
So does that mean
100 pounds a week, then we're gonna do it.
We don't do armor hacks, we only drop supers on a fucking carrier.
So... If our strategic objective is to drop supers on carriers,
then it's okay. But armor hacks is too expensive. We can't fucking risk them.
No. That's not about that. Armor hacks is not a roaming setup. You don't roam in five...
If you know how you use them. It is if you know how to use them. If you don't know how to use them, don't...
Mr. Head Alliance FC, please. You run the campaign from now. Go.
I'm not Head Alliance FC.
Then don't fucking argue when you're told something. That's been known for ages.
Just call Seven Fleet.
Goons just die to them and it's okay.
Holy shit. No, shut up. First of all, shut up. Okay? There's roaming setups and there's strategic objective setups. You don't fucking go roaming in carriers. You don't fucking go roaming in armor battleships. You don't go roaming in armor hacks. You don't.
Yeah.
You don't roam in 500 meter per second ships. Don't argue.
But all we've been doing, all we've been roaming in is fucking hurricanes and drakes and nano
Holy
ships
shit,
the past
that's
like year.
Because that's what they're meant for.
Fucking boring, man.
It was just
for something different for everyone to have fun with. Everybody did have fun last night, and everybody seems to want
bring
to
bring tornadoes.
Mantis, if you want to do it, why don't you do the fucking Vega concept since it's so much fucking faster.
Mantis,
Armor Vagas, we won't be allowed to do Armor
Shield.
Vagas either.
Shield!
1250 meters a second, dude.
Do you guys not understand that shield concepts are immensely superior to any armor concept when it comes to roaming? Do you guys not get this in your head?
Not for fighting outnumbered.
Not for buffered
Okay, not for
as
fighting
well.
Outnumbered, yeah, fair enough. You employ different ideas for fighting outnumbered. I'll give it to you. But, you know, frankly, if you bring 30 armor hacks and you won't get even 30, I highly doubt, you'll probably get more like 10. You'll get 500 goons fucking dropped on you, and then what?
In Drakes.
In Drakes, yeah, and they'll fucking rape you in the face. Oh, and there's nothing you can do about it.
If you've never done the shield daggers, they actually do fight outnumbered better than armor hacks do. So you might want to give them a shot before you bash them.
In any case, this was discussed in the FC channel yesterday, and the consensus was that roaming armor hacks is fucking retarded.
Yeah, I say nano shield ravens.
Same like the supers.
I've seen a loophole in roaming and armor hacks. Say your strategic objective is to roleplay as PL. There you go.
They've never actually roamed on armor hacks. They used armor hacks as support for capitals.
They roam in slow cats, get it right.
They don't roam in slow cats either, they station camp in slow cats.
That'd be funny.
Oh, that's the same thing for PL, they don't know any bit different.
What's the... Marco, what's the point on the armor hacks now?
Strategic objective. You use them for as low signature against anti-battleship fleet. Frankly, they'll probably work for the most part against their battleship fleets. Except for where you need 300 of them for one. If you kill Hugins, then they're basically untouchable, just like Tengus. But...
You will have 500 Zealots if you don't use them, yeah.
No, you won't have 500 Zealots, because Zealot is not a fleet setup for our alliance. We don't use
them,
so no.
Man. If you don't gonna use them, you will never gonna have them. And if you're gonna...
And we're not using them.
Strategic objective, you will...
And we're not using... Do we have armor hacks posted as one of the main fleet concepts on the forums?
We don't have them.
Exactly. Do you want to know why? Because
yes,
Tengus are fucking immensely more superior.
Yes, they are immensely more superior. And when we have 100 people, we got like fucking 100 abandons, and we get raped or never gonna jump to enemy fleet because we don't have enough Tengus to break their fucking.
Until enemy uses smart bombs.
Exactly. Or fucking will never use anything except Tengus, which is...
So, your 300 DPS armor hacks are better?
300 DPS?
Can I remind you that armor hacks have range of 30 kilometers or 40 kilometers at most?
No, but nobody said...
Tengus have range of 120?
300 DPS.
Alright, well, okay, Zealot has 400 DPS, fine.
Okay, situation like that. Like
500.
We had 100 people in the fleet. We had the battleships, versus battleships, and we couldn't jump to them because they would have to use the cups, you know. So what we should do? Stand down, or we should
go wrong?
Jump
bombers.
Yeah, bombers. Or then do shit, or jump to the zealots and have fun.
Your zealots will get fucking owned in the face.
No.
You know why? I'll tell you why. Your zealots have range of 40 kilometers. They'll just pull out to 100, and you'll be done.
You want a Roman number ship, a Roman banana boat?
Because we could warp away from the gate.
Oh yeah, how do you warp away from out of bubbles? Please explain that to me.
What bubbles? Zealot, how fast do we kill the bubbles?
This is all.
Yes, pawns and glad.
There is, it is posted a
pro. Hold on. Who here actually has ever FC'd armor hacks?
I did.
I
mocked
it once, it was fun.
I did. Armor hacks on.
I did up north a bit.
Well, we all died.
Check the reports from yesterday when the NC got fight with the goons. They had 300 zealots and they owned the fucking 500 blob with the supers and fucking. Yeah, and with the fucking cups. They fucking win. Why we can't do this?
Except where Tengus are better, but okay.
Armor Proteus 2012, huh?
They tank well, better, but when I die, I get like 200 mil and I lose 600. When I die fucking Zealot, I get 100 mil reimbursement and I'm okay.
Can we get at least like shield Zealots in Tengu fleets? I mean, anti...
What? There's very many things really wrong with armor hacks. One, your range is absolutely fucking shit. You cannot fight a 100-kilometer setup with a 40-kilometer setup if you can't even get on top of it. And frankly, you won't get on top of it. Why? Because you'll jump in, you'll be in 25 gazillion fucking bubbles. And by the time you get out of those bubbles, half your fleet will be dead.
I've been gone 5 minutes, are we still fucking having this conversation?
Yes.
You're assuming it's for, like, PL and...
Oh yeah, who else are you gonna fight right now with armor hack? What, are you gonna fucking roam CVA?
Well, I done it last night, I fucked up things.
That's the plan.
So we roamed last night and we got a ton of kills.
Mm-hmm. Tell them that they couldn't do it.
I actually want CV to drop drakes on me. That's the whole point.
We don't roam in armor hacks. That is my final word on that. Shut up!
Maka! Told him that not to do it.
He just got himself kicked because he doesn't know how to shut up. My final word, you don't roam in armor hacks. That's it. Done, over, not discussed. You want to roam? Go roam. In roaming setup, not in fucking armor hacks. Why don't you just fly hurricanes?
Because they're fucking gay.
Then fly vagabonds. Fly Cinnables.
Banana boat.
Okay, so Zealots are too expensive, but Cinnables aren't?
I'm not saying Zealots are too expensive. I'm saying they're useless. You know how much superior fucking oracles are to Zealots right now?
Didn't you just say the vagabond?
Yeah, you can go in vagabonds, you can go in Cinnables. I never said Zealots are... I never said you don't roam in armor hacks because they're expensive. I said you don't roam in armor hacks because you don't roam in armor hacks.
Die.
Because 100 drakes will drop on you, bubble you, and you're dead. Last fucking one of you is dead. All of you. There's nothing you can do. Nothing. Trust me.
I wouldn't actually dream of going into Aquarius anyway, so... It's just for fun to go into Providence.
Okay, you don't...
Let's not roam in Providence in those hacks.
I'm leaving this channel. Someone explain to this person that you don't roam in armor hacks, please.
What about